69 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Marvel Monday episode, and I'm going to be talking about a few of the books that came out last Wednesday, August 15th, namely Extermination Number 1, Infinity Wars Number 2, and Edge of Spider-Geddon Number 1. So let's start with Extermination. We'll give the creative team really quickly here. It's written by Ed Brisson. We've got art by Pepe Larraz. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And colors by Marte Garcia with letters by Joe Sabino. I have to admit, a big part of the reason I picked this book up was because it has covers by Mark Brooks, who's one of my favorite artists, not just of covers, but overall. He doesn't do that many interiors anymore, but he definitely does some amazing cover work. So I didn't know what to expect. I haven't read the X-Men in a very long time. And even though I've been trying to get back into the Marvel Universe, I know that the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe is kind of the most convoluted, I would say. And so I really haven't been able to even dip my toe in the pool, so to speak. But I do admit that I was encouraged by the experience I had recently with jumping on Infinity Wars after having no context and not having read any of the Marvel Cosmic Corner in a very long time either. So I thought, well, Marvel did a pretty good job on that of making it new reader friendly. So I'm picking up Extermination because Mark Brooks is doing the covers. I might as well read it and see what I think, right? So I was pleasantly surprised that I was kind of able to know what's going on. You know, I think if you are a longtime comic reader and you have some history with these characters, you will understand what's going on for the most part. If you're a brand new reader, I think you're going to have a really tough time. Say, if you only know the X-Men from the Marvel movies, or, I mean, technically they were Sony, right? Sony had the, or was it Fox? It was Fox. Sony has Spider-Man. Right. So, if you're only familiar with the X-Men for the movies, you're still going to have a pretty tough time. The learning curve is pretty steep. That being said, I was able to kind of pick up on things and kind of have an understanding of what's going on. But again, it's general comic knowledge. Like, I know that the Beast reached back through time and brought the five original X-Men forward in time, and they've been around, I think, for like 7 years now. They've been around. I know the older Cyclops is dead. I know that the older Jean Grey was dead and just came back. And I know just a little while before she came back, Professor Xavier came back after being dead for a long time. So I had a general knowledge of the X-Men, but certainly, you know, no details from reading Hunt for Wolverine. I know Kitty Pryde has kind of taken on a very much leadership role in X-Men these days, but I still wasn't clear on basically one character was the one that really kind of threw me for a loop, and it was Bloodstorm. It was Storm as a vampire, and I remembered that the original Storm at one point was Dracula in the Marvel Universe wanted to make her his bride. So I did remember that storyline. So I was unsure if this was the Storm that I knew from all along that got turned into a vampire, or if it was a Storm from a different reality. Turns out it's a Storm from a different reality. So it wasn't too tough. It was just a quick Google search, but she was probably the only one where I was like, don't really know who she is. You know, we've got the X-Men Gold, the X-Men Blue, and the X-Men Red titles all going on right now. And so, again, I know that and I also think there's an Astonishing X-Men series also going on. And then, you know, Cable's got his series, and Deadpool's got series. It's like, yeah, man, Domino. So the X-Men, they're all over the place. We've got multiple Wolverine titles. And I think, honestly, part of what this extermination event is supposed to do, I think it's a 5-issue miniseries, is I think it's going to lead into sort of a cleanup of the Marvel Universe, at least the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe. At least I hope so. Just like I hope that ultimately the Hunt for Wolverine event, I mean, we pretty much only have one issue left in the Dead Ends, and then we transition to Return of Wolverine. But I hope that cleans up. I mean, we've gotten rid of a couple of Wolverines, but nowhere near the amount that I was hoping to get rid of. I mean, I think technically right now Dakin is dead, and then Albert, who was the cybernetic sort of Reaver version of Wolverine, is dead. But I mean, there's so many. And then, of course, we did hear that Old Man Logan is supposed to be dying as well. He's got an event that was announced, Death. I can't remember. It's called Death of Old Man Logan or something. I don't know. But anyway, his title's canceled, and he's supposed to be meeting his maker as well. So there's rumors, and we know there's going to be a new Uncanny X-Men title starting. There's rumors that all the other X titles are going to end, and we're going to have just one. That would be kind of nice, right? I mean, I think right now we're getting the 2-issue-a-month Avengers title rather than all the various Avengers titles that were going on before. Would Marvel really do that? Would they really kind of kill that cash cow? I mean, I don't know what the sales are like, but I think the sales on this new Avengers book have been very, very good. They're probably selling as much of that one Avengers title as they were of, you know, all the different, you know, secret Avengers and evil Avengers and mighty Avengers and whatever. You add those all up, it's probably about the same as what this main Avengers book is selling. So I think if you could just pick up one book and get the narrative and understand what's going on in the X universe without having to jump around from book to book to book, you know, to me, that's, as a reader, as a fan, that's much more appealing rather than trying to keep up with multiple books and multiple storylines and not knowing, you know, exactly what's going on. Maybe you need to, because there is a giant cast of X-Men, and they can alternate weeks. So you basically get, it's like a weekly X-Men book, right? I would totally be on board with that. Because right now, as I said, I think there are 4 X-Men books coming out right now anyway, between Red, Blue, Gold, and Astonishing. So can we just, like, just put it all in one, if that's what you want to do? So, I mean, again, I don't know if that's what they'll do, because then the one bad part about that is you do have to have a rotating artist, because obviously one artist can't handle, you know, drawing a weekly book. That's, I mean, unless you're Jack Kirby, which you know, then you probably can handle it, but otherwise, probably not going to. So I don't know. I do like the X-Men. I'm not as big of an X-Men fan as some are out there, obviously. That's why I've kind of lapsed on my X reading over the years. But I have considered going back and doing a chronology, going back to Giant Size X-Men 1 and starting to read forward. I actually have – I bought these so long ago, I can't even remember how long. But I have the Essentials. You know, Marvel used to do those Essential trade paperbacks where they're only like $10, maybe $20. I don't think they were $20. I think they – well, maybe they were $15. But anyway, I bought mine off eBay as a lot. And it's like – I have like 8 – I think I bought like the first 4 volumes of Fantastic Four, maybe the first 6 of Avengers, and like the first 8 of X-Men. Those are 3 different lots, right? But I think I didn't even pay $30 for the X-Men one. So I paid, and I got 8 volumes. So I paid less than $8 a piece for them. And they're black and white, which obviously isn't ideal, but it's a way that you can read all those stories. And the funny thing was, I had a pretty good run of Uncanny X-Men. Obviously, it didn't happen like every single one, and I had sold a few. I hadn't sold many comics in my life, but did sell a few, like the first appearance of Alpha Flight and some of the early stuff I just didn't have. Obviously, I didn't have Giant Size X-Men or X-Men 94, I think it's the first one they appear in. But when Marvel did that series, that classic X-Men series, and did reprints, I bought all those. And what was great about those is they had added pages. It added scenes where, you know, kind of think of it as a remastered or to make things make a little more sense in certain places. Plus, they had cool Art Adams covers, and they had some backup stories to kind of flesh out the characters and everything. So I had a giant run of that. So I had read all the way up past 200, I think. But I still I wanted those Essentials just because it was such a big, a good deal not a big deal, but a really good deal. So I picked those up. So yeah, I've considered doing it, going back. Like I said, I think when I first bought them, I started, yeah, okay, I'm going to get caught up on X-Men. I'm going to read it. I'm going to find a reading order. I'm going to read it all, you know, chronologically. And this was probably over 10 years ago now. And I don't even remember. I think I got up through, like, almost done with volume 3. And then, you know, there's constantly new books coming out, right? So it's hard to make time to go back and do a massive reread like that. And then starting up the podcast and all that stuff. So it never happened. But if you guys are interested in that, if you're interested in me doing a X-Men chronology, kind of like the Marvel chronology that we're doing with the Secret Wars right now, just let me know, because if enough of you want it, we'll make time for that. I mean, Hunt for Wolverine Spotlight is going to come to an end on Tuesdays relatively soon, so we're going to need to find something to fill there anyway. So anyway, I really did like Extermination. I'm not going to go through a synopsis and go into a whole lot of detail on it, because I think we are going to do a spotlight on Extermination to fill in the Tuesdays when we don't have a Hunt for Wolverine book or Return of Wolverine book, because we're going to have Mystery and Madripoor coming up next Tuesday. The following Tuesday after that, we're going to have the Hunt for Wolverine Dead Ends, but then we don't have another Hunt for Wolverine until like the third week of September, I think, because the Return of Wolverine mini is monthly, and I don't think there's anything else going on. So I think we're going to fill in with Extermination and you know, we'll figure it out. But I was a little disappointed, and it's not because I don't think he's a good artist, but Declan Shelby, just want to mention this real quick, he's been announced as doing issues. It's either 2, 3, 4, and 5. Wait, it's either 2, 3, 4, or 3 and 4 of the Return of Wolverine miniseries. You know, Steve McNiven, the regular artist, is not the fastest, and rather than have delays, they've split up the workload. And again, I love Declan Shelby's art. Love his art. His work on the Moon Knight series with Warren Ellis a few years ago was absolutely incredible. I think he's got a great sense of storytelling, very impactful images. The only reason I'm not a fan of this is, you know, his art style and McNiven's art style are very different. And so I just think the art's just going to look inconsistent, especially in trade. That's the only reason it kind of bugs me. But anyway, we will definitely find something to fill in on Tuesdays once Hunt for Wolverine is over. Obviously, as I said, we'll be covering Extermination for 5 issues. And then, I don't know, maybe we'll do the X-Men chronology. We'll see. We'll see. But anyway, I know for sure that I'm going to at least cover the first issue of Extermination in detail on a Tuesday upcoming. In fact, I think I already have it on the calendar. I can let you know. Yeah, it's going to be Extermination 1 is going to be covered on September 11th. So I'm not going to go, as I said, too into detail here. But I will say, as I mentioned before, I was able to follow along with what's going on for the most part. It does seem like perhaps it's an attempt to clean up the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe, and especially a way to finally get a resolution on the story of these younger versions of the X-Men who have come forward in time. They're finally either going to get sent back, or something's going to happen where they're not going to be around anymore. So we'll no longer have 2 Jean Greys, 2 Angels, 2 Icemen, and 2 Beasts. As I said, we don't have 2 Cyclops right now because the older version of Cyclops is dead. I'm sure that will change too. I wouldn't be surprised if he returns for the new Uncanny X-Men title, but that it hasn't happened yet. So maybe it'll happen in this series. I'm not sure, but yeah, I did enjoy it. And again, I think if you have a working knowledge of the X-Men universe, you can kind of understand what's going on here. It's not insurmountable. It definitely could be a lot worse. The writer, Ed Brisson, he does give some context and some exposition within the story to kind of help you understand as well. So as I said, the only person I had to look up was Bloodstorm, just because I didn't know. I was like, okay, is this the regular Storm that finally got bitten or is it an alternate version? Turns out it's an alternate version, so I'm not sure where the regular Storm is. She doesn't show up in this issue, and she's not in the the Hunt for Wolverine Mystery and Madripoor series either, where all the other female X-Men are. So, you really would think she was pretty close with Logan at one point. So you would think that she'd be there. She may be out in space with Black Panther. Is that a thing? Ugh, man, just not sure. My lack of Marvel knowledge from what's going on currently in the stories is definitely showing. So anyway, big plot twist at the end of this issue, so that's another part of the reason I don't want to cover it in detail here. But by the time we roll around to September 11th, as I said, you guys will have read it by then for sure. So we'll be able to cover it in detail. I'll give a synopsis and we'll break it down page by page, if not panel by panel. So, all right, let me move on to the next book I'm going to talk about. I want to talk about next. I'm going to save Infinity Wars for last, and I'm going to talk about Edge of Spider-Geddon. Number one, give the creative team really quickly here. It's written by Jed McKay. We've got pencils and inks by Gerardo Sandoval, colors by Brian Reber, and letters by Corey Petit. This, I didn't know what to expect, but this was way different than anything I expected. I thought it would be, but I didn't read any previous like Spider-Geddon or Spider-Island kind of things, and God only knows that Marvel's been putting out all kinds of spider characters lately, just like they've been with, Wolverine. Like, we got Silk and we got Ben Reilly back, and we have Miles Morales in the main universe, and we have, what's her name? Spider-Gwen. So, I know we had all that, and then I know in the Spider-Island, or was it the Spider-Verse story? I think it was the Spider-Verse story that Dan Slott told. We saw it. It was like every version, alternate version from all these different realities of Spider-Man showed up. I think even Spider-Ham. And that was so popular now that they're doing it in the movie, I guess, that's coming out later this year, where we're going to see a bunch of different versions of Spider-Man. So apparently it's popular enough that now it's become a thing, and they're going to tell a story in like the Spider-Verse, I guess you'd say. So the synopsis inside the front story, or inside the front page, even though it's the first issue of the story, says every spider hero in the multiverse who answered the call gave all they had to stop the vampiric inheritors, but true evil is resilient. Meet spiders old and new in worlds familiar and strange, all unknowingly living in the shadow of an apocalyptic threat. What role will they play in Spider-Geddon? The first player is, and we get introduced to Hobart Hobie Brown, who in the regular 616 Marvel universe is the Prowler. But here in this world, Earth 138, Hobie Brown defeated Norman Osborn, the oppressive U.S. president of Earth 138. Before he was handpicked by Superior Spider-Man to join his spider army opposing the inheritors, he's been around the multiverse and back to the streets of NYC. So I do find it a little interesting that Marvel has gone over and embraced the whole multiverse idea that they used to rip DC to shreds about for having this convoluted universal structure with all these alternate realities. So I didn't know what to expect, being that it was about Hobie Brown, who's a Spider-Man. In the first page, we get when teenage squatter Hobie Brown is bitten by a radioactive spider created by illegal waste dumping, he becomes the anarchic Spider-Man. So he's an anarchist, I guess, and everybody keeps calling him Spider-Punk throughout the series. I mean, he does have a denim vest on with spikes on it, a spiked collar, and spikes going across the top of his head in like a mohawk. And he wears jeans and tennis shoes. So it's not exactly what you would expect a spider hero to look like. But I don't know. It wasn't what I expected, as I said. He fights Kang here, which is actually Kang the Conglomerator, who's a businessman. He's got his Kang mask on, but he's wearing a purple suit, purple tie, green shirt. And again, he keeps calling Hobie Brown Spider Punk, which really gets Hobie's goat. And he's constantly telling everybody to call him Spider-Man. And eventually, Hobie goes looking for help. And he gets the help of Captain Anarchist, if you can believe that. So it's kind of an analog for Captain America. But he obviously, I mean, he's Captain Anarchy. He doesn't necessarily stand for, you know, the American way, but this is a much different world. And eventually they go, or Hobie anyway, goes and gets the help of this Earth's version of the Hulk, which is also a punk version. What do they call him? I can't remember. Let's see if I can find it really fast. No, I don't see it. But anyway, it's definitely a different version of the Marvel Universe that I've never seen before. And at the end, Spider-Woman shows up and recruits Hobie, and he decides to leave and go with her. They don't take Punk Hulk, though, or Captain Anarchy. She just recruits Hobie Brown. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess the whole point of this issue was to introduce or reintroduce us to the Spider-Punk character, and then for him to get recruited for Spider-Geddon by May Parker, and Hobie goes along, Spider-Punk goes along, because he finds out from Kang the Conglomerator that in his own reality he's destined to die. So makes sense that he would, like, why not, right? Like, what does he have to lose? So the world was interesting enough, this kind of anarchistic world where Norman Osborn had been president and, you know, freedoms had been oppressed. So it kind of makes sense that there'd be kind of this Spider-Man who stands for anarchy, and a Captain America analog that stands for anarchy, and a Hulk that doesn't really want to get involved, and who's kind of, you know, punk and kind of, you know, living an alternative lifestyle. Certainly not the more straight-laced Bruce Banner we know from the regular Marvel Universe. So I found that all that interesting, but not that interesting, if you know what I mean, right? Like, it's interesting in theory. The execution is, it's okay. The art is okay. It just doesn't interest me enough to keep reading it, right? Like, I know there's a teaser in the back of the issue talking about the next issue, where we're going to get introduced to another different alternate version of Spider-Man. And I imagine that's what a lot of the first issues of these are going to be, right? Edge of Spider-Geddon 2, 3, 4, 5, 0, Superior Octopus 1. So we don't get a name, but we see a girl who looks like she uses a spider armor to fight in. So not really sure what that's all about. But again, I like Spider-Man. I used to be a huge Spider-Man fan, but obviously this isn't Peter Parker and this isn't really Spider-Man. And I just don't have that much interest in reading about the Spider-Man of the week as these Spider-Geddon issues are coming out. Like, I didn't know Peter Parker wasn't in Spider-Geddon. Like, I thought Spider-Geddon was going to be some event where the world was ending and Peter Parker was going to be the one that was having to save it, right, from Armageddon. Thus, you know, Spider-Man saved us from Armageddon, Spider-Geddon. My own fault. I mean, I didn't bother doing any research or whatever. I was just like, oh, it's a new number one, Edge of Spider-Geddon. I know there's been some, like, countdown or titles leading up to it. Didn't read any of those, but let me just jump in and see what I think. And again, it's not my particular cup of tea. I think if you're a giant Spider-Man fan, if you enjoyed the Spider-Verse or Spider-Geddon previous, or even the Spider-Island, if you enjoyed any of that stuff with all these different versions of Spider-Man, you'd probably love this. but it just wasn't necessarily for me. And I thought the art was just okay. Sandoval does draw action scenes really well, and he does a good job of drawing Spider-Man as very thin and angular, kind of like Steve Ditko did. You know, he's not real big and muscular. But to me, Hobie Brown should be the Prowler. And I mean, the Spider-Man with the you know, spikes on his head and on his shoulders of his denim jacket and wearing a dog collar with spikes on it. Yeah, I'll pass. It's just not my particular cup of tea. So that's not to say that you might not enjoy it if you're a big Spider-Man fan. Or like I said, if you enjoyed any of those previous storylines with all kinds of different alternate versions of Spider-Man, this might be right up your alley. But for me, yeah, I'm one and done. All right, so let me talk now about Infinity Wars 2. This is the weekly story, and again, much like Extermination, I decided to read this because I picked up the first issue because I wanted to see, okay, so let's say somebody went and watched the Infinity Wars movie, would they be able to pick this up and be able to follow along with what's going on, or would it be really tough? This one, even more so than Extermination, I think is new reader friendly. Like, I don't even think you necessarily need a working knowledge of the Marvel Universe to understand what's going on here. Like, if you've seen all the Marvel movies, I don't think you'd have any problem. And Jerry Dugan does a great job, the writer, of giving us enough exposition and introduction and context to the other characters you may not know from the movies that you can read this no problem. So let me give the creative team here. It's written by writer Jerry Dugan, as I mentioned. The art is by Mike Diodato Jr. The colors are by Frank Martin. And the letters are by Corey Petit. So I don't know how much I want to give away here, because it is very much a huge plot point with who is kind of the big bad, so to speak, of this series. It's not somebody you would necessarily expect. Somebody who's been on the other side of things to start with, but who seems to have a legitimate reason for doing what they're doing, but it's definitely no longer on the side of angels. The choices they're making, the things they're doing, they are definitely a villain. Whether they're being influenced by Thanos, whether it's something else at work, whether it's going to tie back into the early history of the character who has not always been on the right side of the law necessarily, that's all to be seen. But again, I think this is a really great series so far. A spectacular art by Mike Diodato. Really, really detailed. I did talk when I spoke about the first issue of Infinity Wars last week. I did mention how he's almost doing the stained glass kind of thing with this rectangular grid he's putting on the page, where he's just dividing up the art seemingly for no reason. I don't necessarily like that. I think it's extraneous and unnecessary, and I think it distracts overall from the art at times, and I wish he wasn't doing it, but I will say at least it's extremely unique. Never seen anyone else take advantage of grids like this before. So there are a couple of panels where things get really brutal, really bloody. There's especially one with Captain America and Doctor Strange. And I'll just say that I hope they both survive it. But this was a really enjoyable issue. And it may be one of those situations where when the story's all over, we do a spotlight on it to kind of give you guys all a chance to read it. And then we can kind of break it down from there, because nobody is seemingly safe under Jerry Dugan's watch, based on the people that have already had very bad days, I'll put it that way, in the story. People that may not be around for a while. But, you know, the Marvel Universe, dead is never dead. There's always people coming back. So I know there are a lot more. I know there's a lot more of the story to come, and we've got a lot of other tie-ins. There's even a checklist in the back of the book where we've got, in addition to the regular Infinity War stories, we know it's been teased that there's going to be a lot of shakeups in the reality of the Marvel Universe. We're seeing some, I can't remember what they called them, like Twisted or Mashup or something, like Iron Hammer, which obviously is Iron Man and Thor, Soldier Supreme, which is Captain America and Doctor Strange, Arachnite, which I'm not even sure. I mean, Spider-Man and somebody, right? We've got a couple Sleepwalker ones. We've got a Weapon Hex. We've got a Ghost Panther. So there's a lot left for the story to go. It goes all the way into December. After the first two issues of Infinity Wars, which both come out in August, then it goes monthly. We've got 3 in September, 4 in October, 5 in November, and 6 in December. But with all those tie-ins, there's no shortage of Infinity stuff to read. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I am a little worried about that story structure that they've decided on, though, because it does seem front-loaded on the main series. You know, we got 2 issues this month of Infinity Wars, and a lot happened. These issues were action-packed, right? And now, all of a sudden, after this one, we're not going to get another one until September, and then it's going to be October after that. So it'll remain to be seen how much of the bigger story we get in all these other Infinity Wars titles, because they're all entitled Infinity War. It's just Infinity Wars : Iron Hammer, or Infinity Wars Sleepwalker, or, you know, Infinity Wars Weapon Hex. So again, we'll have to wait and see, but it's been pretty good so far. So much so that I'm contemplating going back and reading the Infinity War Countdown series. I know Nick read that, and I'm sure he'll want to come on when we start talking about Infinity Wars more in depth and give his thoughts. So I probably will go back and catch up on that. I mean, really, I feel like I need to go all the way back and read Infinity Gauntlet again and get caught up. I mean, so much has happened with Thanos since then, with the Infinity series from a few years ago, you know, just the regular Infinity series where, yeah, I mean, I read the first couple issues, and it was by Jonathan Hickman. It was really good, and it kind of fell off the radar. But even going back further than that, like the Annihilation event with the Cosmic Corner of the Marvel Universe, I haven't even read that. So there's definitely a lot. There's so much Marvel stuff that I want to read. It's just a matter of finding enough time. So anyway, that's going to do it for Marvel Monday. I know I didn't get too in-depth with any of the books. I just didn't want to spoil for you guys. But again, we'll definitely be talking about Infinity Wars in more detail coming up soon. And that's not 100%, but I'm pretty sure that we will do a spotlight on Infinity Wars coming up relatively soon. And for sure, we'll be covering Extermination in great detail at a later time. So anyway, thanks for joining me as always. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help us with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All 3 spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. And a reminder, I'll be at Comic-Con Palm Springs this Saturday. If you're going to be there, let me know. I'd love to hook you up with a Comic Source lanyard, meet up, take a picture, all that kind of good stuff. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.